Welcome to the Farm to Table Talk podcast, where we talk about our food system from what we eat to how it's grown. I'm your host, Roger Wasson.
Well, for the last couple of centuries, people have been leaving the farm. They've just been going away as fast as they can and moving into towns and villages all over the world. That's been the trend. But is that trend changing? It seems like we're running out of farmers. We need more people back on the farm. And we have a lot more people that would like to go back on the farm. But we're going to dig into that a little bit. And so whether you are interested in going back and farming yourself or why other people are, or you just want to know about what's going on with the food that's being produced for you locally and across the world for that matter, we have a great conversation today with Mary Kimball. And Mary is the executive director of Center for Land-Based Learning. Mary, thanks for being on Farm to Table Talk.
It's great to be here, Roger. Thanks so much for having me.
I don't know how you have time to talk to me. You have so many things going on.
It is an incredible time to be in agriculture. It really is. It is one of those very exciting times because there's a lot of people who want to know about where their food comes from. They've read some books or they've read some whatever it may be online, and they're interested in digging in more. And agriculture in general has, over the years, maybe been a little concerned about that digging in. But what we're finding is people just really want to know. And if we're transparent and we're open and we're clear about the reasons we do certain things, whether it's farming practices, whether it's the kinds of crops we grow, whether it's where we grow and these crops and why, what it means to our families and our traditions and our communities and our culture, people just are super engaged and excited. So there's that side. And then there's this, and I think it goes together, this excitement about going back to the farm, and maybe it's a generational thing. I mean, certainly there was the back to the lander movement in the 60s and early 70s, and maybe we're at one of those times again. But it's just a tremendous time for people to be a part of it, and we need them. Agriculture absolutely needs the people, the interest, the knowledge, the spreading of knowledge, and it's such a great thing to see and be a part of.
Well, let's talk about those people. Let's first talk about the people that shop and eat, which is most of us.
Yes.
And so if you're, you know, on the eating end of this business, how do you describe these people? Are they the main shoppers of families? Are they, do they tend to be, well, what do you know about them? The people that are expressing more and more interest and why is it that they have
becoming farmers,
more interest?
Especially?
Yeah, no, I'm talking about consumers. Why are they interested in learning more or knowing more than they used to?
You know, that's definitely an interesting question. And I do think it has, certainly the customers are varied, of course, mm-hmm. very diverse. But yes, a lot of it has to do with health. And there is so much information out there now, right? We're kind of bombarded with whatever the newest diet is and whatever the newest thing we should or should not be eating. And I think because of that overwhelming amount of information, people are digging in. They're not everybody, but certainly plenty of people are trying to understand all of those different issues as related to their food. And sometimes they don't necessarily get the right information, and we're doing the best we can to present information in an unbiased manner. So certainly I see a lot of it has to do with health, and certainly parents who are, you know, raising young children especially and really wanting to have a better connection to ensuring that their children are receiving the best possible nutrition and connecting them with the land. I mean, we certainly see, you know, whether it's the growth of farmers markets across the country, the growth of the CSAs, the community supported agriculture subscription boxes, you know, kind of the old farm stand model, whatever it might be. I mean, we're seeing a lot more parents really trying to engage their children with the farmer in some way. And oftentimes the best way to do that is, for most people who live in cities, is through the farmers markets. So I think it's kind of this curiosity level too, yeah. To be honest, is yeah. Like there's so few farmers left on the land, you know, less, we always used to say 2%, but now it's, I think, 1.7 or 1.8% and just getting smaller, unfortunately, mm-hmm. That is feeding not just this country, but the world. So there's a certain level of curiosity there. We're seeing a lot more of farmers, I suppose, in the news and in social media and books. And I just think it's this, hey, we need to reconnect again. So I think it's coming from a lot of
healthy.
Different places.
That's healthy.
And it's healthy. Yeah.
Do you get the sense that that's pretty much happening all over the country? You're based in Northern California, and you're covering a big chunk of California, maybe a half or a third of California. But I don't believe you don't operate outside of California, do you?
We don't. No, we the Center for Land-Based Learning currently operates programming in 28 counties in California, which is a lot. I mean, if you compare it to other states, certainly it's a big chunk of this state, which is a really large state. But no, this isn't, certainly isn't restricted to California. We're not restricted to the West Coast. I mean, I have been, all around the country in over the years and really seen a change. I mean, just if you look at the interest now in urban farming.
Yes.
That we're seeing in so many large cities for so many different reasons. And it's just so exciting to me to see this interest again in bringing food and bringing food production back into our cities, which is where it used to be. And then there were policies that were created quite some time ago now, but, you know, really after the 40s especially, to move agriculture out of the cities and to move it out into the rural areas and onto, you know, it's out there. It's the farmers are out there. They're being productive. They're growing the food for us. And we, as city dwellers, basically we don't have to see it. We don't have to smell it. We don't have to be exposed to it. But we get to go to the grocery store and have an incredible array of incredible food. And that has been the predominant, you know, philosophy in most cities, around the country for many years. And so what we're seeing today is that kind of change back to actually, it's important to have food production in cities. Is it going to feed every single person in that city? No, it's not. But what it does do is connect people again to their food source. It connects them to the land. It connects them to the importance of their food and healthy eating and living. And it revitalizes communities. In many of our cities are food deserts, and literally places where people cannot walk or get public transportation to a place with any kind of food, let alone healthy food, you know, 10, 15 minute walk, and a lot of people don't have transportation they can use. So it's exciting to see this revitalization across the country and especially in our cities.
Oh, it is exciting. Well, let's talk about the people that want to be farmers then, because, you know, you can be farming in the city now. You can do urban farming, you can do rooftop farming, or you can be farming out in the country and producing perhaps for CSAs and farmers markets. And you have a lot of programs that meet the needs of those people that need help. I wonder if you could share a story or two with us. Give me an example of somebody that maybe had this dream and somehow reached out to you and kind of walk through how they took advantage of some of the programs you had and maybe have gotten to a point that they are farming now.
That's right. Absolutely. I'd love to do that. So we, 6 years ago, created the California Farm Academy training program, which is a 7-month intensive training model that's designed for working adults, actually, designed for folks who are wanting to transition from whatever it is that they're doing today to farming full time. And to do that, they obviously need a lot of help, support, let alone the land and access to capital, which are the two biggest challenges for beginning farmers. But they certainly need the technical expertise, they need the resources, they need the other kinds of background and that we can provide. So an example of somebody that I'd love to tell the story of is Jay Cuff. And he was a teacher, and he grew up in Eastern Oregon, and he grew up in a very rural farming community. And he didn't grow up on a farm, but he grew up around farms and worked on farms in the summers and so on, and really always dreamed of being a farmer. But in that community, he never saw the ability to be able to buy the land that he would need to get into the kind of larger scale, not huge scale, but larger scale agriculture because his family was not a part of it. And again, that's a reality for a lot of folks. If you don't have the land because your family has it, you know, where do you go? Where do you start? So he left there, and he just never felt like he was going to be able to follow that dream. So he had moved here to Sacramento. He got married, and his wife actually was at a presentation that I gave about our beginning farmer training program through her work. She went home. She told her husband about it, Jay, and she said, "I want you to do this. This is your opportunity to follow your dream." And so he did. And after the end of the 7 months of graduation, actually prior to graduation, he already started leasing land from us because we have a what is called an incubator program. We have land that we can then lease out. We don't have it. We lease it as well, but we then sublease it to beginning farmers so that they can start their own farming enterprises. So within, like I said, actually before graduation, he had teamed up with somebody who was in his class, his California Farm Academy class, did not know them prior to the class. They teamed up in partnership and started a farm. He is now, and again, this is a, you know, we love this because we want these folks to move on, right, from our incubator program. That is that's success. We want them to move on to scale up, to get additional land, to be able to connect with additional resources and farmers in the community. So he started out at half an acre that first year, and he's now farming almost 10 acres outside of the city of Dixon, and he has connected with another farmer mentor that the Center for Land-Based Learning connected him with, and he's growing not just seasonal vegetables, but now is growing berries and fruit trees and a lot of other crops that he would have not been able to grow on the land that we had provided, and selling to everything from CSAs to farmers markets to grocery stores. In our region, we have some incredible grocery store partners such as Nugget Market and Raley's supermarkets that buy locally from farmers in the region. He's sold to them. He sells to restaurants. So there's an example of someone over the course of 3 years
that took
a dream to very much reality.
Now, has he gotten to the point that it can support him, or does he still need to have outside farm income? I don't want to be
well.
Too
he is. He is farming full time, mm-hmm. and actually now has staff, right? So that's always the sign, I suppose, of success. but of course, his wife works. She's not a farmer. Mm-hmm. She has her own job and her own professional career. So it's not that it supports them in total, I suppose, as a family. But certainly, he is able to do it full time, which was always his dream, and he was able to do that again, right, almost right from the beginning after he graduated from our program.
Well, that's a great story, and oftentimes it does involve phasing in, starting small
right.
and getting larger, and you have to put together maybe if it's a couple one of them may continue to have another job and that helps out with some, you know, benefits perhaps, and or
That's
the
right.
some
yeah.
other way you put some things together until it reaches a scale that it's supporting you. And then the story, like you said, you're supporting others before long and employing
yeah.
other people. I think some people would be surprised that you could start as small as a half acre and then also get up to the point that even 10 acres can produce enough to keep you busy and other people busy as well.
That's right. Well, and in the case of where he is today, especially with the permanent crops and things like berries and fruit, I mean, those are much higher dollar return. Again, needing more labor, of course, but the ability to get to that point is what he has been working for some time. And yes, the return on an acre or two of berries, you'd be
yeah.
surprised right. when you're selling direct. And in our area, of course, and this is the case in, of course, many other places around the country, if you've got an urban market that, you know, here in this region, we're very fortunate to be, you know, right next to Sacramento, which is America's farm to fork capital. We're, of course, right near the Bay Area with the amazing numbers of restaurants that buy direct from farmers and not just restaurants. I mean, we now have this is started in California, but certainly something that has spread throughout the country. Corporations, large companies, you know, Google, Twitter, they literally have their own chefs. They have all of their own kitchen and restaurant facilities. It's a part of their marketing to staff, to prospective employees, that they have this incredible food at their disposal at any time of day, literally. Oracle is another example of that. They work with Bon Appetit Management Company, and these are, you know, top of the line chefs buying all local food and then also providing for their staff the CSA, the subscription box program as well. So a lot of opportunities for a smaller farmer. To be able to, again, sell directly and sell it with very high premiums.
Well, I've talked to some people around the country that are doing, they're seeing similar growth. And even the areas that don't have our California weather, they still are using hoops and greenhouses.
Yeah.
And they're growing vegetables year-round in places where there's snow all around them. And so they're finding ways to start small. And that I think maybe that is another key to talk about a little bit, Mary, is that to get started, and if you don't have a lot of acreage or a lot of money, mm-hmm. two important components, you're not going to go out and get 10,000 acres of wheat in western Kansas and buy a combine. Mm-hmm. You know, there is a scale to be able to get up that you can invest your own labor in and be really hands-on and growing a business small. Not
That's right.
And that is one thing I think people wonder about. They think, well, isn't this kind of niche production? Well, maybe. I'm not sure. It certainly is the way that people get started, isn't it?
That's right. And I mean, if you think about any other industry, you think about any other kind of business, you know, you take a chain grocery store or a chain, a large, you know, now what's large, where, how did they start? They usually started as a small family-owned business. They still could be family-owned. They're just a lot larger. Restaurant chain, whatever it might be, they all started somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And they usually started with one store or one restaurant or one, you know, one storefront, whatever that is. And then they scaled up over time. Now, not everybody gets to that scale-up point or they stop at some point because they're like, we don't want to continue scaling up. But it's no different for agriculture. You have to start somewhere as a beginner, and that's why we provide the incubator program, because we provide land for lease for them at subsidized rates, that and also with the technical assistance and other kinds of resources that they need as beginners, and incubate them, right, for 3 to 4+ years so that they can then move off onto their own, whether it's land. Now, we have almost 100 graduates now of our California Farm Academy training program, and I believe now almost 20 of them have bought their own land as a result after they graduated. So these are folks, many of them, that actually do have the resources to buy land, anywhere from 10 to 100 acres, which is a lot in California, in the areas that we're talking about. Others in our program come from farming families. This is another very interesting aspect that I think people may not realize, is we've had quite a few folks who have come back to the farm, and this goes back to your earlier questions about who's coming back. They're coming back because they see opportunities today, whether it's in value-added agriculture, whether it is in growing different crops than maybe, you know, dad and grandpa and, you know, what they grew. Maybe it's seeing a very new business opportunity and innovation. So they're coming back. And those folks, because they left, didn't really get as much agriculture experience on the farm as maybe they need to be able to get into the business today. So they're taking and being a part of our California Farm Academy training program and then going back with their family and working together to create new opportunities for their family farm. So, you know, they in this case, they have the land, and they don't necessarily need to the scale upside because they have some family resources to help them. But they're still beginners from the standpoint of what it is that they're doing. So we have a lot of different types of folks who are a part of this beginning farmer movement, so to speak.
You know, when you told the story about Jay, I envisioned somebody sitting in a cubicle someplace and and thinking that, wait a minute, I went off to college, I've got a college degree now, but I'm not having as much fun as I hoped I would. I'm not getting any fresh air. I've got a boss. It's kind of impossible to get everything done. And I come in and take my spot at the cubicle and spend all day on a computer. I wish I could be, you know, my own boss. I wish I could be out in the fresh air. I really want to get my hands dirty a little bit. I want to grow something. I like food. And then the dream has started. That's my stereotypical
dream.
Yeah,
and that's a good one. We have many of our class members each year that certainly fit that kind of stereotype. And, you know, like I was saying, many of them are career changers. I mean, we have folks with MBAs. We have folks who've been at Wall Street. I mean, it is a variety of different places that they have come from. And yes, they are looking for something different. Maybe their job is not particularly fulfilling in the way that they'd hoped it to be. Again, like Jay, maybe they'd always had this dream and just never had been able to see that the opportunities were there. You know, another place where we see a lot of folks coming from is each year we always have a lot of veterans, usually between 3 and 4 veterans out of our 20 students. And they're also, you know, many of them are very self-motivated. They're extremely hard workers. They want to give back to their communities. They see this as a way of serving their country in kind of their next iteration of their lives. And oftentimes they very much like to be outside. They like working with their hands, and they are happy to be working in many cases by themselves. Which, you know, you gotta be willing to do as a farmer.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's absolutely true. You know, there's just for a lot of different reasons, people are coming back and saying, this is the kind of life that I value, that I've either always wanted or that I, had at one point and I had to leave it and now I have the ability to come back. Or, like I said, finding different ways to serve their community. Many are very interested in education. They're interested in helping to serve their communities from a healthy food standpoint, going back to the food deserts issue, you know, obesity issues. You know, people just have a broad variety of reasons of why they're wanting to whether it's come back or be a part of the agricultural sector.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit more. Somebody is sitting and listening to us discuss this, and they happen to fit the mold. They for one reason or another, they're saying, I need change. This isn't working for me. I'm not happy. I want to go this direction. How does this happen? I mean, what causes, like in Jay's case, his wife heard you speak mm-hmm. and came back and told him, and I'm sure there's other variations of that story, but what's the normal way that people say, okay, I'm going to make that phone call or I'm going to send that email?
Yeah, it's interesting, and you're right. It comes from many different sources. Sometimes it's someone who's been in our program in previous years, and you know they tell their friends, right? A lot of it is literally word of mouth. There are beginning farmer programs now all across the country. This really began in 2008 as a part of that last big farm bill, and Secretary Vilsack. It really pushed this new funding source in the Farm Bill, the Beginning Farmer and Rancher Development Program. So as a result of that funding from USDA, a lot have new beginning farmer training programs have come up across the country. So there are wonderful websites now, depending on where you are in the country. Doesn't matter. There's great websites out there, like beginningfarmers.org, and the Farmer Veteran Coalition has a wonderful website and guide to, you know, where you can get beginning farmer training no matter where you are in the country. There's a lot of different kinds of training. Our program, the 7-month intensive model, is one model. There's, of course, many others out there that for folks who may not be able to do that. And there's Know Your Market or Know Your Food, Know Your... I can't even remember now what it is out of the... Know Your Farmer, Know Your Food out of USDA. I mean, so now we just have these incredible places that in less than 10 years, no matter really where you are in the country, you can connect up with a program that potentially suits your needs. If it doesn't, then maybe you might need to move. believe it or not, we've had folks who have moved from the East Coast to be in our programs. We have in this year's class that starts in February, we have folks moving from Southern California. So if you really want to do it, the programs are there, and there's a lot of different kinds that really can fit the interest of that you have.
Well, let's talk about that just a minute then, because you're called the Center for Land-Based Learning. You have a number of different programs available, and people can go online and they can see what those programs are, but you purposely didn't call it Center for Desk-Based Learning.
That's right.
That sounds like people get out and get into the field when they are in a
absolutely.
Program with you.
All of our programs, including our high school programs that I was referring to earlier, which is where we started from back in 93, are all based, for the most part, you know, outside on the land. So, of course, there's times of year, even here in Northern California, where you can't be outside and it doesn't work so well. And there's the more traditional classroom style learning. But in general, whether it's our high school programs that we run or it's our beginning farmer training programs, really these are about hands-on training, experiential learning, that takes place, yes, definitely outside. So you have to be ready to do that, wanting to do that, and knowing that that is a part of the process.
Well, when people sign up, are they doing it full time? Are they doing it part time? What's the schedule?
Well, our training program, California Farm Academy training program, is 7 months, but again, it's designed for working adults. So we have classes two nights a week, Tuesday and Thursday evenings from 4:30 to 7. And then two Saturdays a month, and those Saturdays are most of the day, and those are the time where we can really get the students out to other farms so that they can see and learn from so many of our wonderful farmers that we have in this region, lots of different kinds of farming practices, methodologies, values. They're just trying to get people to see there is no one way, right, of farming, and there is so many different great creativity out there, and you can do the same thing. So those Saturdays are really critical for the learning kind of off-site. So we're literally taking people to over 25 different farms over the course of those 7 months. and meeting mentor farmers. They also, as a part of the 7-month program, have to create a business plan, their own business plan. And that actually is a big chunk of our program because the production side usually is not so much the challenge. The challenge is selling all of this lovely produce or fruit or whatever it is that you've been working so hard at producing. You know, one of our mentor farmers likes to use the term sell before you sow, you know, and that is a hard thing to do for beginning farmers because they don't have those networks yet and they haven't created a product, right, in which to sell yet. And so that is, again, where we really come in and assist them with their marketing, assist them with those networks, assist them with new opportunities that they would not have had they not been a part of the California Farm Academy. But yes, it's a part-time, it's 220 hours, again, over the course of 7 months, but that's just the classroom time, and by classroom I mean those 3 days per week. There's the out-of-classroom time, the homework time, the doing your business plan time, that probably adds in another at least 100 hours on top of that.
Does livestock fit into this?
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, livestock, absolutely. So many people today are very interested in integrated agricultural production systems. And we have done some work in terms of the livestock side. Part of the restriction for us is we have been supported from the beginning from the California Department of Food and Agriculture, and that funding comes from the Specialty Crop Block Grant Program, and livestock is not a specialty crop, so we have to get other funding in order to provide the livestock side of our curriculum, but we certainly have been able to add in over the years quite a bit on pastured poultry and pastured, you know, whether it's hogs, cattle, goats, other things. So it's a smaller percentage of our program, especially as compared to, you know, seasonal vegetable crops and again, fruit, nuts, that kind of thing. But certainly it has been adding in and we plan to add more in the future.
Well, I'll tell you, Mary, you sound like you're about as excited as you can be about this program. So, kind of tell me, what makes you the most enthusiastic on the near-term future of the program? There's a lot of uncertainty. You know, we're going to have a new USDA coming up, and there's all sorts of changes that go on. But what makes you most enthusiastic about the outlook for this sort of program, and specifically the one you're involved with, in the near term?
Yeah, I think the most exciting thing, it's always local, right? It's always, you know, there's lots of things that are going to be happening on the national stage that certainly we can't control. Don't even know who our new Secretary of Agriculture is going to be as of today. And that is definitely challenging. But, and certainly national policies to the extent that I was referring to earlier with regards to the Farm Bill and potential funding and really how that has helped change these opportunities for us has been dramatic. But I always think of, you know, the opportunities locally and regionally. And they are literally coming out of the woodwork in terms of the amount of opportunities for our beginning farmers in this region. And that is what makes me excited. Whether it's business partnerships that have land that they haven't been doing anything with, it may be developed at some point in the future, but they don't know when, and they said, you know, that urban farm thing, that looks pretty cool. We want one of those. You know, these are people who never had even thought about these opportunities in the past. So whether it's those kinds of people that are calling me literally almost on a daily basis to say, how can we get involved? How can we help our community? How can we help beginning farmers? To the people interested, as we spoke at the beginning, have this conversation, interested in knowing more about agriculture, where their food comes from, and connecting to farmers, and certainly the people themselves that want to become farmers, and how their goals and visions are coming to reality literally every single day. And it is as we continue to grow our graduate program beyond, you know, like I said, we've graduated 100 new farmers, and every day I'm learning something new about what they're doing, what they're creating, how they're helping their community. And then we got another crop of 24 that are going to be starting in another month or so. So just, you know, incredible opportunities for them, which always is the most exciting thing, and connecting them with their future and their community's future.
Well, just to wrap up, let me have you tell them how they can get a hold of you, where they can find more information. So if somebody's out there and is struck by the things you're talking about this afternoon and catching the vision, what do they do? How do they reach you?
Sure. Well, of course, we have a lovely website. So that's landbasedlearning.org, L-A-N-D-B-A-S-E-D, learning.org. And that will get you to, of course, our programming information. And my name and all of our staff name for the California Farm Academy, they're all up there in terms of contact information if folks want to call and talk to our program director for California Farm Academy to learn more about the program and what kind of opportunities there are, or they're interested in some other aspect of the work that we do and want to partner with us in different ways. We're always up for those kinds of conversations.
Well, I'll tell you, this has been a great conversation, and I really appreciate what you're doing, growing farmers and meeting the needs that the interests that people have today, knowing more about farming, but again, getting back to growing farmers. So, Mary Kimball, the Executive Director of the Center for Land-Based Learning, thanks for being on Farm to Table Talk.
Thank you so much. It was really great to talk to you today, Roger, and I'm thrilled to see all of the work you're doing and getting all of this information out to people who may not know as much about it as you and I do, or others around the country. It's exciting to see.
You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson. If you like what you hear, go to farmtotabletalk.com and follow us on SoundCloud, Facebook, and Twitter, or go to iTunes to subscribe and give us a review and a rating. Thanks for listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.